If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Memorial Day deals are here at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, including Samsung. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances, $396 or more. Like the Samsung Bespoke AI Laundry Combo, the largest capacity, fastest, all-in-one laundry combo available that washes and dries in one machine. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 5/15 through 6/18. Selection varies by location. Total savings varies based on purchase amount. See Lowe's.com for details.
Hey, everybody, it is John Pollock, and we've got a special interview coming your way with Mohamed Hassan, real name Mark Copani. You knew him as one of the top heels in the WWE 20 years ago in 2005. Today, he is the director of human resources for the Fulton City School District, and he's been a bit of a reclusive figure in the industry over these decades since he left the WWE shortly after the exceptionally controversial angle involving The Undertaker that coincided the same week as the London bombings on July the 7th of 2005. Over the last number of years, he has been starting to take interview opportunities, and it kind of culminates with this episode of Dark Side of the Ring that is premiering next Tuesday. It's the season finale of season 6 and looking into the very short rise and very quick fall of Mohamed Hassan in WWE in 2005. For those that were not watching at the time, Mark Copani was performing in Ohio Valley Wrestling as Mark Magnus, and we'll get into that in the interview in terms of how he came to OVW and earned himself a developmental deal. He became OVW heavyweight champion, and then, as was pretty routine at the time, when he got the call up to the WWE, it was not to play Mark Magnus, but it was to play a completely different character as an Arab heel living in a post 9/11 world. Copani is not of Arab descent, something that would probably be greatly scrutinized today, but at the time, it was thought to be a character that, while you look in hindsight at a lot of the problems with the character and mainly focus on that final angle, here was the ability to at least have a bit of a nuanced character, certainly by WWE standards, in late 2004 and into 2005, in that here is a villain that is being presented as someone that has done nothing wrong, but is now being the target of racism in a post 9/11 world. And it's not so much that he is misleading you, but it is the way in which he carries out that aggression towards the babyfaces. Now, I don't think anyone was expecting WWE to necessarily have the creative latitude to tell a properly nuanced story like that, and sort of everyone's worst case scenario was seen out in 2005. What happens, it's a very famous story where on July the 4th, they did a double taping of Raw and SmackDown. As part of the SmackDown tapings, Sean Daivari was served up as a quote-unquote sacrifice to The Undertaker, as this was leading to Mohamed Hassan's Great American Bash match with The Undertaker. What they would have was 5 masked men that would be sent as henchmen on behalf of Mohamed Hassan to attack The Undertaker and start choking him, with Taz making the question of whether it was piano wire that they were choking him with, and you had the wink and the nod of these 5 being portrayed as terrorists and then carrying Sean Daivari out of the ring like a martyr and being hoisted above and carried away to the back. This was just designed to be your latest heat-getting angle for Mohamed Hassan that was going to culminate in a number one contenders match with The Undertaker at the pay-per-view, and for all intents and purposes, setting up Mohamed Hassan as the title challenger for Batista the next month when they go into the nation's capital for SummerSlam in Washington, D.C. Did not go as smoothly as they hoped, because days later was the July 7th bombing, and it was the morning that SmackDown was to be airing. So WWE took the measure of editing the angle off of the UK broadcast for obvious reasons, but decided to go ahead with its airing in other international markets and domestically in the U.S. on UPN while running a crawl underneath, warning people about the angle that was to come and giving people a heads up. This, not surprisingly, received great outrage, and not simply from wrestling fans, but from mainstream media outlets, from Variety at that time. WWE and UPN have heard from several concerned viewers following last Thursday's WWE SmackDown, which depicted a terrorist-like attack involving a group of Arab Americans and a wrestling opponent. The episode aired the same day as the subway and bus bombings in London. UPN ran a crawl on its screen four times throughout the broadcast, noting that, quote, in light of today's tragic events in London, parental discretion is advised in viewing this episode, end quote. That wasn't enough of a warning for some viewers who took offense at the depiction of Arab American wrestlers Davari and Muhammad Hassan, who was shown in the episode praying while five men wearing ski masks rushed the ring and choked the quote-unquote good guy, longtime WWE wrestler, The Undertaker. WWE and UPN said that they were unable to alter the episode due to the tight time frame between the show's taping earlier in the week and its Thursday night time slot. Gary Davis, spokesman for the WWE, said, "We all feel bad about the timing of the segment." But, he said, people will see what happens this week as the storyline gets straightened out. The Hassan character recently joined SmackDown, moving over from Spike TV's WWE Raw show. While UPN spokeswoman Joanna Lowry said the network reserves the right to preempt SmackDown, but didn't think it was necessary last Thursday. She said, due to the tragic events in London, we took the added measure of running an advisory four times throughout the broadcast so that viewers could make the appropriate viewing decision for their household, the network said in a statement. We will continue to monitor the situation involving this character and storyline. And everyone knows how this ends, where UPN makes the call that not only is this angle done, but so is the Muhammad Hassan character. And in a bizarre set of circumstances, Muhammad Hassan goes from someone that was poised for a championship match, if not an outright championship win that summer, to being completely out of the company by September, and by default, the industry. Mark Capani will speak about this storyline and where his head was at come the end of 2005 during this run in WWE and what his attitude was towards professional wrestling. As another advisory, just at the beginning for a disclosure, I am interviewed on this episode of Dark Side of the Ring. I have not seen the episode yet, but that is worth noting here as well. Here is my discussion with Mark Capani. You've been someone that has not been like in the public eye in a big way over this. Did it take you like quite a long period to get to a point where you wanted this whole treatment, and looking back at this, you know, pretty memorable era of WWE surrounding your character, did it take a while for you to be comfortable doing this?
Yeah, it took at least a decade before I felt comfortable doing an interview about it. You know, where I had moved on from wrestling. I had avoided anything that brought up what I felt was disappointment and the pain that was caused by the end of my career in the WWE. About a decade after my last match is when I did really my first interview with Sean Ross Sapp, who's at Fightful now, who I just spoke with the other day. But something like Dark Side, I've done a couple appearances, and I get offered to do podcast interviews all the time, and I turn them down, not because I don't want to talk about it, but really because of time constraints. Like, I'm currently at work right now, taking a very quick lunch break to talk to you. But in my new career, and really for the last 11 years, I'm extremely busy. And now I have four children that keep me busy every night and every weekend. And so I haven't done a lot of interviews. You know, I've done a few bigger interviews with Chris Van Vliet, and I did one with Maven over the summer, which is a lot of fun. But something like Dark Side had never really occurred to me when it was brought up by Chris in our last interview in April of last year. I remember just being like, absolutely not. I don't want to be on Dark Side. It always ends tragically for whoever the featured person is in each episode. And so he kind of put into the universe. And when I was approached by the producers, I was really hesitant. Like, it wasn't something that I wanted to do. I didn't jump on it at all. They really had to kind of sell me. And then even after the sell, and again, no, I love the show. I've watched every episode of Dark Side of the Ring. I've seen every single one, except for a few of the ones this season. And maybe that's why it's like this is never usually portraying their feature in a positive light. But they convinced me that that's exactly what they wanted to do, is they wanted to explore the controversy because of the positivity of how it ended, because of, you know, the epic failure that was Muhammad Hassan somehow, you know, turned into a positive story for the person who had been playing him, which was me. And after talking to them, I think twice on the phone, we did a couple of pre-interviews. then I agreed. And then we started kind of working out what the show was going to look like, which was actually a lot of fun to be involved. They're, like I said, great organization, great group of people, super accommodating and friendly, really took my perspective and my wishes into account when they were putting the interview together. And I really love the product. I am actually very excited for this to come out next week.
So I just want to go back to the starting point, and you arrive at Ohio Valley Wrestling in 2002, and there were, you know, the talent there that were already under developmental deals, and then there were talent that got there and they were not under those deals. Did you come in already with a developmental deal, or was that something that you eventually got presented with while you were down there?
No, I did not. I came in, I left school. I was going to the University of Buffalo and ended up transferring to the University of Louisville, and I moved up somewhere off of campus. So I was 21. I think it was 2021 when I came down there. Didn't know much, you know, still very young. So I had lived in Buffalo for a couple of years going to college, but I moved to Louisville completely by myself, and I enrolled in the Saturday class at OVW. So it was a class that they would host Saturday. So it was called amateur class. And then people would pay, I think it was like $500 a month, but I'm not sure the exact amount. And Danny Davis and Jim Cornette would stop by, and Nick Dinsmore and Rob Conway, they really ran it. And eventually Rip Rogers came in, but it would be people who paid and wanted the experience to be a wrestler, and they teach them how to bump, and they'd, you know, teach them some moves, and they get to work in the ring. And sometimes they get to work with like a Shelton Benjamin would come by, John Cena, like people who, those guys always wanted to be around a wrestling ring. If they had nothing to do on a Saturday, they were coming down to hang out. And eventually we got invited to come Tuesday nights. I believe there was a handful of us that they asked to come in Tuesday nights and basically be practice dummies for some of the newer guys that came down. I remember Matt Morgan was one of them, Shelton, John Cena. And they would come in and we'd just help them test some moves out and kind of be, like I said, they're tackling dummies. But I didn't get signed until maybe a year and a half, 2 years after being down there. I mean, I was working at Chili's, you know, at night, just trying to pay the bills. Eventually they invited us into their, there was me, Johnny Jeter, and Chris Pavone, who was Chris Cage at the time. They invited the three of us to join their daily class. That was their WWE class, which was 6-7 hours a day of intensive training with guys like Shelton Benjamin and Nick Dinsmore, the guys who were helping us run the amateur classes on Saturday, but this was their main class. But we still weren't under contract. So I was the only three guys that were there, that were wrestling all day, working out right after. Then we would all go work at Chili's, right? We all worked at Chili's. Jeter and I were the first ones that were there, and we worked at Chili's. We lived together. And so I didn't get a contract till about 2003. So I definitely lived a dual life until then. We would actually be working at Chili's on a Saturday night when OVW would air on TV that we would tape on Wednesday, and we'd go to the bar and watch ourselves on TV, get the crap beat out of us because we were jobbing at the time.
Have you kept in contact with Johnny Jeter at all these years later?
Yeah, we talk. He had his first child. He lives out in, I think he's out in Arizona now, but, yeah, we talk not as often as I'd like, you know, like I said, with all the guys, like with Jeter, with Cage, Chris Masters, Gene Sininski, you know, but we still talk once in a while. We live very different lives now.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
You know, it's such a different system today where you will see talent in NXT that create these characters, they play these roles, they're on television, and then you make the migration up. You're in a role here where you're not just getting the big call up, but doing a totally different character from OVW up to WWE. And again, you're about 24 when you're getting the call up to WWE. I mean, it really is not a hyperbole. Like, the world was thrust on your shoulders and you're being thrown into the deep end here with some of the biggest names and playing a totally different character than the one that you'd been playing at OVW.
Yeah, we had some time to develop the character, and we did a lot of development on the road at the house shows that we were traveling to, and a lot of it was in the work or in the ring promo work, just trying to see what the crowd would react to the most. I don't think I really understood when we first started. We went to Connecticut and we started doing the vignettes, the behind the scenes, little short features that they would play. I don't think I understood at the time how big the character was going to be. And I don't really think I understood the push that the character was going to get, because I knew nothing else. I didn't know any differently. I mean, obviously I had seen guys that I'd worked with in OVW come up and they took on new characters too, but the characters were not as polarizing, obviously, as Hassan was. And I did understand that. And I did recognize the sensitivity behind the character that I would be playing. And I also recognized the risks. You know, they were clear. We talked about Sergeant Slaughter and all the things that he had to deal with when he turned heel and became anti-American. And we knew about the Iron Sheik. And, you know, I would hear the stories of what had happened 20, 30 years previous with characters that were similar. And I knew that the world was different as far as their view on wrestling. A lot more people understood that wrestling was a work. It wasn't 100% real. But at the same time, I knew the risks of playing a character like this going into it. But you just don't say no. You don't say no to an opportunity like that. They don't tell you that you're going to be on the road in the WWE mid-carding, which is what I started out doing, and eventually main eventing. And you don't turn that down. I saw the potential in the character. I knew the risks, but I saw the potential. And I went for it. I had no choice.
From the get-go, as the character is being developed, you're shooting the vignettes. Is this one where Vince McMahon is very hands-on with the character from the get-go? How close was the relationship with Vince McMahon to the Muhammad Hassan character?
I would see and talk to Vince, and Vince always had a lot of keen insight, especially into crowd reaction and the development of the character. As far as being very hands-on, he also had a company with 100 other people and under other storylines and characters to run. So he wasn't sitting there directing, you know, each vignette. He wasn't sitting there directing each segment backstage. But he would always give us his insights. We would always talk in Gorilla. We'd always talk after a match. And I always valued what he had to say. I mean, he was Vince McMahon, and not just he was the boss, but he understood wrestling from the ground up. Every aspect of wrestling was Vince McMahon, and especially at that time. But as far as being hands-on, this was his baby, which I didn't really understand that at the time either. Like, I knew that this was a character he had an idea about, but I didn't realize that this was a character that he wanted to mold and push and be his next big heel, his next big foreign villain, so to speak. But his involvement was probably more behind the scenes than hands on with this character at the time.
And are you sensing, you know, immediately you're suddenly on screen with Mick Foley, with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels, they would like just Steve Austin, like you're in there with all the big guns immediately. How are you processing this as somebody that's only a few years into the business? Are you realizing in real time the significance that, you know, we see call ups where the company can be lukewarm behind? This was one they were full steam ahead behind you.
I did understand that. I didn't maybe understand the significance of it at the time. I mean, obviously much later when you look back and reflect on something, you can understand and appreciate how fortunate you were to be in that position. At the time, it was work. That was my job. And I would say that at 24, 25, given the thrust that I had received personally, me, not everybody who's 24, 25, I was probably ill-equipped to handle it in the best possible way, which I think I've been pretty open about. I wish that I had more experience heading into that role. I mean, I had only been in the business about 3 or 4 years prior to becoming Muhammad Hassan. I think if I had more experience, I would have understood a little bit more about the locker room and the etiquette at the time. Again, I, I've said it and I've heard it, but locker room etiquette behind the scenes was not the reason for the demise of the character. And it was just speed bumps that most guys who got brought up at that time had went through. Mine was probably a little bit more magnified given the fact that I got that push and the animosity and the jealousy with some of the guys, not a lot of them, just a few of them that might have brought on. But as far as understanding the significance of being in the ring with Hulk Hogan, you can't miss that. Like, I definitely understood that I was in a very fortunate spot, at the time, but it was difficult, man. It was a daily grind and I was very new, very green. Not the greatest wrestler in the world, but I was, you know, efficient enough where I can get it and go. But I would come into the arena and I have to do a backstage segment. Then we'd have to go over my in the ring segment and then I'd have a match on top of that. And that was a lot of nights. That's a lot. That's a lot for somebody my age with my level of experience. And like I said, at the time, it was work. But looking back on it now, that was what developed me and that grew into the person that I would eventually become is having those experiences and that level of pressure and being able to deal with it and learn from it.
As obviously a big focus of the episode is going to be on the SmackDown episode that ends up airing right after the London bombing. This is done obviously several days before the bombing. As this is laid out to you, do you have your concerns about how this angle is going to land, or is this just another day at the office and this is building up a big match with the Undertaker? Was there anything that stood out as concerns for you prior to the real world news that was going to catch everyone off guard?
Well, this was prior to the news. And not with that particular story or angle, because I'm not the first bad guy that had a group of other bad guys come out and do my bidding. That's pretty commonplace in wrestling. I mean, that is, you know, that's bad guy 101, so to speak, is to gang up on the good guy. My concerns were heading into SmackDown in the direction of the character in general, because SmackDown was network TV versus cable, and network TV was a lot more strict and regulated than cable was at the time. And I know a lot of what we were doing was becoming more and more edgy and pushing the envelope. And so my initial concerns were coming from Raw to SmackDown and the restrictions and the potential for pushing the boundaries to the point of no return, as well as the direction of the character. Because what I loved about the character when it first began, what really drew me to it and what made it so easy to generate, you know, those promos and those feelings, was this was a character that was wronged, did nothing wrong. This character, this character's family, this character's people, community had done nothing wrong. They had been in this country. They'd assimilated in this country. They went to school in this country. They held down jobs. They paid taxes. And some of the actions of a few were affecting the lives of many. And he had a problem with that. And that was the original intent of the character. And he was going to show you by force how he's going to fix that problem. And I love that character. I loved that about him. The character began to change, as everybody knows, in an attempt to generate more and more heat. And really, the direction of any bad guy is going to try to generate heat, not generate less heat, generate more heat. And so was it a natural progression? Maybe, but it was, could it have been done differently? Probably, but it was the direction they wanted to go. And so my issue was that the direction we went took it away from this American citizen who was being marginalized and treated unfairly for no reason to one that relied more on religion and fanaticism and now kind of became, ironically, a caricature of what he had intentionally and originally despised at the beginning of the arc. And so heading into that, I had a lot of issues moving over to SmackDown. But as far as having a bunch of guys come out and beat up The Undertaker, I went to sleep that night not thinking anything of it.
And then Thursday occurs, and this is when the London bombing occurs. There are 53 fatalities, and this is where, you know, WWE makes the decision. They cut the segment off of the UK version of SmackDown. It runs in North America, including on UPN in the US, with a warning in advance of it. And I think that the legacy of a lot of this, Mark, is the fact that you were the collateral damage in all of this. What is being conveyed to you from the company at that point in terms of how they're proceeding and what you're being told, you know, in the hours following this news coming out and how it's going to impact you?
When everything initially had happened, I remember I went to bed that night not thinking anything of it. And then obviously it was Tuesday. Head home, woke up Thursday or Friday and kind of found out that all of this had gone on and the controversy. And so when I first reported back to work, I think our initial take is let's just wait it out. You know, I don't think anybody really, and in my from what I understood, I mean, this, there could be a completely different feeling in the office that nobody was sharing. They could have known that we were screwed right from the beginning and this was it. But what was told to me was we can do a media campaign. We can do interviews. We can try to downplay it. We can try to add a different spin to it. There was an original intent to fight it, to fight against, because a lot of it was, again, unfairly portrayed. For example, everybody just assumed that the men in ski masks were Middle Eastern. None of them were Middle Eastern. But obviously that was the intent, but there was a way we can reframe that. So maybe, you know, it's like, listen, it wasn't a Middle Eastern attack. It was just a bad guy attack. And so I think initially we planned on trying to fight against what the perception was with just a little smoke and mirrors. But ultimately, I think the outcry and the damage had already been done. You know, people were too upset, and there was really no way that this character was coming back. I mean, 53 fatalities, it was tragic. And not only that, but it really reflected the changes that were happening at the time. There was a lot of instability going on around the entire world, not just the United States. And the character, again, with the way the character had changed from the beginning to what we were seeing now, just wouldn't be able to survive. And I think the WWE recognized that. And so there's that moment in Dark Side of the Ring where I tell him that the moment that I knew that this character was done, maybe not me as a wrestler, but the character was done, was I remember looking at houses in Syracuse, New York, really just a week or two before all this blew up. Because again, you know, the character was getting risky, but no one had any idea that this was going to happen. No one could predict what was going to happen in London. And I was looking at houses and trying to just plan where I was going to make my permanent residence now that I was traveling and I was on the road. Cause I was living in DC at the time, but I didn't want to live in DC. I hated flying out of the airport and was just too busy. And I went to Johnny Ace, who was head of talent relations at the time. And I remember asking him, like, you know, what are we doing? I'm about to buy a house, which was a pretty expensive house at the time. And I remember he looked at me and he said, don't buy the house.
That's not a good sign.
And that's how I knew that the character was done. We weren't fighting it. Did I know that I was done? I don't think I really understood at the time that I was, but I definitely knew that the character was done. And long story short, I didn't buy the house.
I guess that's so many people look at that question of, okay, if this is ultimately the end of the Muhammad Hassan character, how does that become the end of Mark Capone, period, with the company? That could you have moved to Raw? Could you have been taken off TV for several months, repackaged, brought back with a story? Was that something you were interested in a post Muhammad Hassan character? Like, where's your head at as this is all coming down and suddenly this red hot character is just being, you know, they're cutting bait on?
I wasn't. The ups and downs I had with wrestling, the issues that I had had in the locker room, the issues that we talk about on Dark Side, they were gone, and I had found my groove, and I was comfortable doing what I was doing, and I was comfortable with the people that I was with. And then suddenly that's just taken away from me. And no warning. Like I said, I went to bed Tuesday night, not thinking anything of the segment that we had just taped. And it was almost as if it was just absolute and utter devastation that I just didn't show and didn't realize until much later, led me to just want nothing to do with wrestling. I want nothing to do with it. And I could have went to a different promotion. I could have tried different characters. I mean, the opportunities were there. Sure. I could have been calling the writers every day, trying to push a different angle, you know, and I just didn't. And I didn't want anything to do with it. It was almost a complete and total avoidance of anything that made me think of wrestling. I didn't watch it. I even stopped talking to a lot of my friends that wrestled for a long time. I mean, I still talked to them, you know, within the few years after I left the business, but not much, other than Shad Gaspar, because we were working on a screenplay together. I didn't really talk to many people about it. I wanted to completely move on with my life and do something completely different and unrelated to wrestling, because something that I realized later is the realization of the ups and ultimate down of my career was too much for me to process. I wanted to avoid it. I wanted to move on, pretend it never happened, not talk about it. I didn't really do any interviews ever. I didn't go to do any signings or any appearances. I didn't go to any other promotion. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. And it wasn't until many years later that I was really able to recognize why. And that was because I didn't want to face it. I didn't want to be reminded of it. I didn't want to even remember that I did it at the time.
Yeah. And we'll just wrap up here, but I think that almost like you're, you know, just taking yourself so much away from the public eye, it almost like grew this mystique of the character and this just crazy set of circumstances that I don't think enough people appreciate that, you know, had you been someone that was like concerned about this angle and voiced that, I mean, I think that would have been just a killer for you just politically in the company, that here's a guy we're giving everything to and he's shielding himself from a big hot angle. But the ultimate is going through with this. And you unfortunately were the collateral damage here and had like you were not the person that was, you know, opting to air this angle. It's just such a bizarre set of circumstances. I'm really glad this episode is going to dive into it. And yeah, you have come out on the other side, but I can imagine like there was a huge devastation for you to have to get over this and what could have been. Like, you are probably coming out of SummerSlam that year like the top guy on SmackDown as champion instead of leaving the company shortly after.
Yeah, I had to completely rebuild myself from the ground up, and it took years and years and years of trying different things and getting very lost in transitions. And ultimately I had to find myself again, and I had to put everything behind me, and I had to recognize and face what had happened. And I had to face the career that I had and the ending that it had. And I had to stop blaming myself for everything. I do believe in holding yourself accountable. You'll never make any changes in your life if you blame everybody else for your problems. I definitely hold myself accountable for everything that happened. At the same time, it was a matter of circumstance and not a matter of me as a human being that ultimately led to the downfall of that character. But it took a while for me to be able to recognize that and move on from that with the confidence to be able to do something else. And it really wasn't until 10 years later that I started to feel remotely comfortable delving into the past. And honestly, it wasn't until a couple years ago that I would be able to sit down and talk to you about it so openly, because it did bring up a lot of wounds. What helps me now, obviously, is I have a brand new career. Well, I've been doing it for well over 10 mm-hmm. years. I have a new career. I have a beautiful family. I have 4 children. You know, I am busy and I'm happy. And what I do every single day is make a difference in over 3,000 kids' lives. I mean, probably many more from all the things that I've done over the last decade or so. And that allows me to look back on the pain and the devastation of what had happened 20 years ago and appreciate that I did come out on the other side, and that I do have a message about people who go through difficulties in life and challenges in life, about being able to really push through day every day, you make a decision every day to continue to try to be better. And I've experienced it, and I think that it's of value to be able to talk about it now. And I'd like to keep talking about it. So I'm hoping the Dark Side of the Ring episode gives me the opportunity to continue to have conversations like this. Because if they help people in any way, I feel like I'm still doing something that's very rewarding and something that has helped me, personally, and helping others is what that is.
Well, I'm really happy that you've reached this part to be able to look back on it and with that perspective. But understandably, that does take time for everybody. We'll promote it one more time. Tuesday night, Becoming Muhammad Hassan. It's airing on Vice TV, 10 p.m. Eastern time. You can also watch it on Crave up here in Canada. Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out here during your lunch break to chat with us. We will be watching the episode on Tuesday night.
Thank you, John. It's been fun.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.